Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Grey Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
Black women, athletes, black women.
What's terrific is Shaq and Phil, the best black women that ever
did it. Life is the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Blustering in from sea, with a rollicking song he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered.
Call in at 646-727-3649. Thank you, Black Athletes Sports Network, for sponsoring the Gray Leopard Cove year number 7. I'd like to welcome our new sponsor, Reality Sports Group in Reston, Virginia. Want to be a sponsor? Check in the Cove email. You can send news to Gary N. Gray at blackathlete.com or Norris19 at att.net. Giovanni's Produce Store is one of our sponsors, and they're located at 1600 Liberty Street, El Cerrito, California. You can call them at 510-235-1233. Also, the New England Informer magazine, Doreen Wade, CEO, Boston, Massachusetts, with her Sunday afternoon internet radio program, which has an informational black news sound by the radio. You can locate them on net, www.soundsbytjradio.com. TJRadio.com. Miss Wade will be on WVON 1090 AM Chicago on the Santita Jackson Show on the Reporters Roundtable. Listen online www.wvon.com. Michael Lewis Ingram from BASN and Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. You can find him on Saturdays on blocktalkradio.com, 11:01 Pacific Time, 2 to 4 Eastern Daylight Time. If you have a weak heart, don't come in here, because it's strong and it's real. speak your mind. Call in at 718-508-9216. Get your Philly, New York groove on with the Soul Patrol. Soul Tree Radio in the raw. And you can listen in at during that time. My second radio home, WCLM 1450, and www.wclmradioonline.com. Sports Talk with Cowboy Reggie and the Professor Tony Cobb, the G-Man, Glenn Brown, and Hall of Fame coach Lou Anderson, with all the latest HBCU sports news, 9 Pacific Time, 12 Eastern Daylight Time. Want to hear old school music? Listen to P.T. Brown and the P.T. Brown Get Down weekdays. And don't forget the Little Old Mystery Man on Saturday afternoons. He will make you smile and laugh with music of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Listen to WCLM 1450 and WCLMRadioOnline.com, the heart and soul of Richmond, Virginia. Sports writer and activist Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba from WUFO 1080, Buffalo, New York. Remembering Roland Rogers, CEO of BSN in New York City, and the family of the BASN writers and broadcasters. Cannot forget the 707 and 609 with their support.
Join the Go Caravan, the Soul Patrol, at Bad Nation, WCM, Facebook.com. We got 3 more days to wrap it up.
Tune into One Love Radio on Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with your hosts Rhonda Harper and Imani Wilmot on blogtalkradio.com.
If you're looking for real talk on sports, politics, and other important issues, tune in to The Bachelor Pad every Monday through Friday beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. L.A. Bachelor and Tony McClain look to enlighten, empower, and educate people on the topics that people are talking about, but discuss them from a social, economical, and racial standpoint. It's sports, breaking news, updates, politics, great guests, and music in between. It's The Bachelor Pad every Monday through Friday beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen at www.thebachelorpad.biz. That's www.thebachelorpad.biz. Follow us at facebook.com/padnation and at pad for truth on Twitter. That's at pad4truth.
Please visit our website, www.blackathlete.com, and come and get a different look at the sports world. Call the Gray Leopard Cove at 646-727-3649.
Let's get this party started. As we get a scoreboard looking a little bit here. Baseball scores just ended over the line. Boston 5, Yankees 1. Sabathia loses 13th game of the year. Cincinnati 7-3 over the Milwaukee Brewers. 9th inning. And the Oakland A's have ended the Texas Rangers bid for the Western Conference title as they beat the Texas Rangers 1-0 today. 1-0, and it puts them 5.5 games first place with 16 games left to go in the season. Rest of the week, let's do this. Wait. Fox Network goes into the afternoon mode. The rest of the season, they're in the afternoon mode, night mode. The games have just ended in Fox Sports Network. So they're done for the day. Later on today, Baltimore is at Toronto. Gentlemen against Rod. And New York Mets just started 0-0. Mets are hosting Miami, Miami Marlins. Miami. Anderson against Mazzucca. And the Phillies are ran into a bus song with the Washington Nationals. They lost 5 games in a row. And Washington won 5 games in a row. Cole Hamels against Gio Gonzalez, and the Phillies are going to lose again today as usual. The Cubs are ruining the Pittsburgh Pirates' bid for the Central Division as Baker plays against Garrett Cole. That's a 405 Pacific Darton. Kansas at Detroit. Then I guess Richter. Cleveland at Chicago White Sox. Jimenez against Ramirez. Tampa Bay at Minnesota. Matt Moore against Albers. And Tampa Bay is fighting for a playoff spot. And San Diego to Atlanta. Erlen against Menin. The Angels, again, they did it again last year. They made it to the end of the year to win. Angels at Houston. We were against Overholzer. Cardinals in St. Louis. Seattle is at St. Louis, the interleague game. James against James Patton against Washington. And the double hitter, Miami, and the Mets, Turner, against Torres, second game. Colorado, Arizona, Oswald against Miley. And we're going to the West Coast. You got the mean old Dodgers hosting the San Francisco Giants at 6 o'clock. Pacific time, 9, 10 Eastern, 10 minutes ago, and it's going to be the last game, but then it's going to end in a giant uniform against the Lasco. The Dodgers are trying to clinch the Western Conference. All right. Okay. News of the week. I know Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds will be going to jail. And Major League Baseball should be ashamed of himself for doing what he's doing. I said it many times before. If Barry Bonds goes to jail, about 30 more people need to go to jail. That includes the Commissioner of Baseball, Bud Selig. If Barry Bonds spends one day in jail. Bud Selig, Tony La Russa, Joe Torre, they all be in jail. This is a travesty to baseball once again with their nonsense of the drug policy. Either you abort it or you don't. What we're going to do is we're going to break off into some important football things. Before we do that, we got to introduce it right. go with it.
On Sunday, September the 15th, Washington Football Club will play the Green Bay Packers at Green Bay. The Carolina will be at Buffalo, and on Sunday at 4:25, Denver playing the New York Giants at the New York Giants Stadium. San Francisco will be at Seattle. And on Monday, September the 16th, you can watch Pittsburgh playing Cincinnati at Cincinnati.
Yeah, the big games of the week. We have other games, but we're not going to get into that. Okay, more news of the week. The NCAA, once again, like Major League Baseball, they don't know what to do. They have five SEC players who took money benefits from boosters and stopped playing. You want these kids to play football. You want these kids to do this, and you don't pay these kids. But you have boosters who give money to these kids, and you never find the school. Come on, be serious. You cannot be serious. Johnny Manziel today came back for the Alabama game, and Johnny Manziel will play. He's not playing one game this year because of what he did. He took money from boosters, and he's playing. The NCAA, right over the Major League Baseball, you stop fooling around. We got a 916 over here. Caller, you on the air?
Yes, sir. Gary, what's going on? It's me, Eric.
Eric, how you doing, Eric?
I'm doing good, sir.
Good to be in here, bro.
Yeah, hey, glad to be on the Cove, man. First visit. And I seen you were talking about, you know, what took place with, you know, Johnny Manziel. Yeah, he's definitely out there playing.
Well, the NCAA, what I read this week, was that two boosters paid $25,000 for tickets for this game. $25,000 for one game today.
Wow.
That's why Johnny Manziel is playing today. That's the reason why. Eric, what is your take on this booster stuff? What's your take on it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, my take on it is that when they first started the investigation on Johnny Manziel from signing autographs and going on autograph signing tours and getting paid money and also having pictures of him accepting money as well as checks that was paid to him that he signed, and I obviously was able to cash,
yep,
and to only be suspended for the first half of the opening game of the season.
Yep.
Goes to show you just, you know, the investiture and how much cash is streaming through the hands of not only, you know, the schools and in the conferences, which the SEC has won, you know, the last several national championships. The fact that, you know, what was articulated as the biggest reason for wanting to, you know, take Manziel down was the Alabama constituency, you know, who has won the last few national championships. They felt like Manziel stood in their way of another undefeated season. And today, you know, Alabama's, as we speak at this time, trailing 14-7. So, yeah, you know, the Wu-Tang Clan had a song called Cash Rules Everything Around Me. And that's definitely the part about college football that was taking place with Johnny Manziel.
Yes, indeedy. It's gotten so bad, it's so obvious. It's obvious now. It's like out of the open sea. It's like you can't do anything about it. We're going to do it anyway. You know? It's an attitude that the NCAA and the SEC has about this whole situation. The SEC doesn't care. They don't care.
No, you're right. You know, it's not even amateur football no more. You know, it's professional football called college football.
Yes. And they might
and,
go
you know,
ahead,
you,
they might well go ahead and pay the Dogland game. Pay the athlete and stop talking around. Let's be serious. You mean
correct.
I mean, you go to a bowl game, and now,
right,
the way it's set up, the way it's set up, there are only two or three bowl games in the BCS. So everybody else below the BCS is getting peanuts compared to the BCS bowls.
That's true. I mean, college football, you know, if you look at, like, today, you know, college football is known for primarily playing on Saturday. Now they have games on national televised games on Thursday for some of your lesser conferences that usually wouldn't get national attention. Then you have your Friday night games as well. And then on Saturday, from the time, you know, I live on, you know, we both live on the West Coast, say from 9 a.m. in the morning to like 7 o'clock at night, we can catch a college football game on one of 10 channels.
Yes.
All day long.
I was a kid. We had over three games per weekend. Three.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah, SC and Notre Dame, that was the big one.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, now we can watch, you know, like I've seen one game, you know, and I always like, you know, when I do watch a game, usually I'm busy, you know, I'm writing some information or, you know, trying to catch up on what I couldn't do during the week. So I'll have, you know, something on in the background. I always try to, like, watch a lesser game, like Eastern Carolina versus Virginia Tech or Navy versus Delaware, you know, because we know what the big powers are going to do, so to speak. But one thing that always astounds me, each weekend, when you watch these games or just flip through channels and just look at different games, is every one of these stadiums, for the most part, are packed. All across America, every Saturday, people are just doling out all kinds of money to go to these games. So it's never an attendance factor for them to televise the game. And plus, they're being televised, so they're getting money from so many different ends that it's incredible. I mean, it's literally larger than the National Football League in a revenue stream in terms of attendance, because every state is having games all at once, you know what I'm saying, at different times, and they're all packed.
Today at 7 o'clock, the University of California.
Yeah.
The University, Ohio State University.
Okay.
In Berkeley, you cannot get a ticket.
Wow. And that was Iowa State was the opponent.
Ohio State Buckeyes.
Oh, the Buckeyes. Okay. Okay.
It'll be in Berkeley tonight.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, Ohio State and the University of Texas, which has its own 24-hour, 365 days a year, and during the leap year, 366 days a year.
There you go.
You know, yeah, televised program called the Longhorn Network. No professional team other than, I think, the Yankees have the Yes Network in New York. You know, you can kind of, if you want it in your package. But the Longhorn Network comes as a general package in my cable package, where for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 366 days in a leap year, they stream nothing but Texas programming of their college sports. And now it's football season. Or you can get everything you want on Texas Longhorn football, and they're a college team. So other than the New York Yankees, that's the only sports-specific the nation I've seen where one entity controls a 24-hour network.
And they tell me in America that they can't pay the athletes. Are you serious?
That's true.
Last week was a historical week.
Okay.
And ESPN, NBC Sports, CBS, Fox Sports Network did not say a word. We had nine brothers, nine.
Right.
Who started on Sunday afternoon as a historical landmark, because last time it was seven. junior is nine, and not one network seemed to deem it was important. I want the Gold Caravan to understand that this is history. We are, like my friend Fred Whitted would say, we have to write our own history. We have to write
right.
And we have to keep it for posterity because nobody is going to get it again. So therefore, what would you take on this?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, you know, at that point, you know, a couple of things come to mind for me is when you look at the nine brothers, you know, I mean, E.J. Manuel and Buffalo, you know, you'll fill in where I don't remember anybody, but E.J. Manuel in Buffalo, Geno Smith with the New York Jets, Colin Kaepernick, obviously, with Frisco, Terrell Pryor with the Oakland Raiders, Cam Newton in Carolina, Robert Griffith III in Washington, Russell Wilson in Seattle. Who are the other two brothers that I missed out on?
Michael Vick.
That's right, Michael Vick with Philadelphia, and then one more.
We got Wilson or Cam Newton. They got
our
brothers.
Correct. We got Newton. And yeah, I mean, it'll come to mind. RG3. Yeah, I think we said RG3, but I can't read the ninth. Will come to mind. I know you sent me the email. Sorry for the missing ninth brother that was starting, but when you look at, you know, the geographical locations of where they're coming from, you know, from east to west to south to north. There's a brother, you know, throwing the football, you know, and starting quarterback and excelling. And in most cases, you look at Cam Newton, Kaepernick, RG3, Manuel, Geno Smith, Russell Wilson, you're dealing with quarterbacks with 3 years or less experience in the NFL. So these are young quarterbacks. These are quarterbacks, Terrell Pryor as well. You know, these are young guys. These are quarterbacks that was on the rise. One of the best moves that the late Al Davis made, and Al didn't see color. He's seen winning. You know, he's seen, you know, who could take him to the top, was when he took Terrell Pryor, I believe, in the third round or so of the draft that took place after the real draft, the supplementary draft, because the first two rounds, every team in the league passed on Pryor like twice before Al decided to pick him up.
Right.
And he rushes for 112 yards. You know, Matt Flynn's got to be beside himself because Matt Flynn was supposed to be the starter for the Raiders. He was supposed to be the starter for Seattle after he fought, was it the backup for Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And it didn't work out there. He had that one great game when Rodgers was injured. Like, he threw up almost 500 yards and four or five touchdowns. And he got a big contract from Seattle. And then they let him go. He couldn't even beat out Tavares Jackson to be a backup. Tavares Jackson's the backup to Russell Wilson in Seattle until Russell Wilson shows up a rookie and beats out Flynn. Flynn goes signs with Oakland after they trade Campbell Carson Palmer to Arizona.
Yeah,
you know, they traded him to Arizona, and then he shows up and figures he's going to be the starter, and he gets beat out by Terrell Pryor. So Matt Flynn's really, you know, looking at the black quarterback as someone that's pretty much has taken his thunder away. But, you know, my take is it's all across the nation, you know, that these brothers are excelling. They're in every, you know, they're in key geographical areas. Who would have thought the New York metropolitan area, you know, would have, you know, Geno Smith, who I really liked at West Virginia, who's, you know, people didn't think he was going to perform well. You had a major sports network who was upset the way he conducted himself at a draft. Like, that was going to stop him from playing well. And he's done well, you know. He almost, almost took down Tom Brady's team, just didn't get enough resources and help. So I look at it from the fact that the rise of these brothers at quarterback has been great. They're not really reporting it, but it's also impacted the fact that other brothers are not getting head coaching jobs.
Looking at this list, I know there's one thing that was missing. In the Midwest, there's not one black quarterback in the Midwest.
Yeah, in the middle America.
Yeah, there's no zero black coaches in America.
Wedge.
Hey, my friend, but, you know, I got to come in with some bad news. You know, I had to give Daniel Snyder credit, and it goes back to what we had a conversation before about why the parents are so sorry. They don't get up their sorry asses and be more involved in the school. Many of you know that the Washington football team, I don't use the R word, but the Virgin Golden Richmond had their training camp. Well, on 106-5, the fan in Washington, D.C., that LeBron Arrington is on that show, the commissioner was on there, and then the interesting how all of a sudden he started to sound more like a politician than the commissioner when it came to the Washington football team and their words. Well, basically, the owner, Dan Schneider, has made a practice of going to inner-city schools. Matter of fact, Coach Richard McPhee, if he's in our high school, many of you might remember Sean Barber, who was on the team years ago, and he donated some $500,000 in order to get the football facility up to par. Well, the mayor Dwight Jones, I want to paint the scenario for you real quick, but the mayor Dwight Jones, they had a press conference set up here where the Washington football team had their training facility. Now, this was on ESPN and also NFL Network. It was a big deal. You know, the mayor didn't even show up. Didn't even send a surrogate in order to get the $250,000 check that Dan Schneider was going to give, you know, the city of Richmond, Virginia. Okay, now we come to find out that they had a city council meeting, and basically was that Mr. Snyder said, I'm going to give you this check for $500,000, but you had to come up with money to match the funds. Now they have a city council meeting, they're telling their parents that we can't match the funds. So Mr. Snyder's putting the money back in his pocket. All because we got sorry-ass, lazy parents down here in Richmond, Virginia. Now, this is also happening in Tennessee. My cousin, Pat Freeman's brother, James Freeman, told me they're having problems, too, where in the city, again, that the facilities are falling down. And people don't realize this. When you have youth in your school, the federal government gives you X amount of dollars. Every time those young people leave the city, they go to county, you're losing money. And what are they doing in the city? Building prison systems. So I just want to bring this to the panel and get y'all thoughts on that.
Yeah. Well, you are so right. I mean, we would spend in the day for this. I see, like up in California, in Richmond, they would rather spend money on building a stadium than building a school. We had to hold these officials accountable to what they're building, and we're not doing it. We're not doing that.
Yeah, taxpayer. That's our taxpayer dollars.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they had a similar referendum here in Sacramento with building a new Kings Arena in the downtown Sacramento area. And so much of what was done with that was politicized because Sacramento's the state capital of California. And because when you look at California, you look at, say, the NBA, where they were able to leverage the National Basketball Association from the political format of the government, you know, the state government, was the fact that, you know, California by itself, this ties back to, you know, what you're talking about with stadiums. California by itself is like the fifth largest economy in the world. So if you just decide to call it the country of California because of its, you know, the movie industry, the wine industry, the agricultural industry, the technology industry, which we all utilizing right now, it all comes out of Northern California. It's Silicon Valley, correct. So you're looking at a real global power player, especially in today's world. You know, Apple's headquartered here, Samsung, Oracle, on it, eBay, Google, Yahoo, on and on it goes. So what happens is they were able to leverage, you know, the National Basketball Association in terms of what they're able to do if they were to move the franchise out of the state due to the fact that the NBA has the majority, has a good maybe 10-15% of their franchises in California. You got, you know, you have the Clippers and the Lakers, you have the Kings and the Warriors. If you look at Major League Baseball, you got the Giants, you got the A's, you have the Anaheim Angels, the Dodgers, and then the San Diego Padres, right? Then you have multiple hockey teams. So California fields the most sports teams than anyone else. So they're able to leverage from a state standpoint what it is. And then when you start talking about Washington and the state of Virginia and what takes over, it's the same concept. It's political headquarters for the United States of America, that area you're in. You're in Spook Central, you know, Langley and all that over there. And one of their biggest entertainment vehicles is that football team. So they're able to leverage past these things just so eight times a year, unless they get a few playoff games, people can show up to RFK. Oh, well, it's not RFK no more, whatever that name of that stadium is over there.
FedEx Field.
Yeah, you know, so you have all that going on with the corporatocracy, and it's interesting they use a Federal Express, you know, mailing system because everything out there is federal. And that's the similar ilk I see with both places. So that's what happened with the arena. But the people locally in Sacramento, it was never sent up to vote. It was given to a referendum. You know, so then there was individuals who wanted to see it, you know, hey, how come we're paying taxpayer dollars to, you know, when we got more problems going to the city to keep, a franchise here, a particular team for a NBA franchise, and we got environmentals to do. So that's all being pushed back so that it can get on the table of the Governor Brown, that, you know, one of the local state senators, Steinberg, he's out of the Sacramento region, is trying to get a lot of waivers going on. Now they're building that, you know, megalopolis, technologically sophisticated place in Santa Clara for the Niners. The Oakland still can't get stadiums, even though the Warriors are supposed to have a new arena built on, you know, the San Francisco coastline, you know, on the Barbary Coast somewhere.
What are they saying about Oakland up there in Sacramento? Because there's a possibility of the Oakland area losing the Oakland Raiders against the L.A. What is the San Francisco?
Right.
And the A's, the San Jose.
Right.
That's the reason they know A's are going to go to San Jose. I mean, the Oakland political machine is broken up. They laid off 30 more policemen this past year. What is going on in Oakland?
Yeah, but you know, Gary, the thing that gets me is that, as I preached this time before, and I know my man, I can back me up on this. You know, we have been so dumbed down when it comes to politics, you know, because my whole thing, again, is that look at the people who get out there and raise all the hell. You got these fools on the sign talking about impeach Obama. And I'm like, really? I mean, but yet they're dedicated to what they do. And, of course, you have the white supremacy that's out there on the airways. I mean, come on, we had the Copeland brothers that were behind the Tea Party. When you have Limp Baldur's Essence, Six Wives, you don't believe me, but I digress. You have Savage and all these people out there and Culture over and over again. I mean, it's not an accident that Fox News have these professional, I call them professional assassins, to go after this garbage on again. And then we call them up and I keep over it and show that they lied about it. Where's the outcry to put them in check?
Yeah. I don't know, bro. Go ahead, Eric.
To your point, I look at it to the standpoint, if you look at it from a global level, you know, in terms of what was going to take place allegedly in Syria when allegedly it was suggested that, you know, chemical warfare, and there was footage to say that it was unfortunate people who had heinously suffered from such an attack.
Yes.
And, you know, the government of our country, you know, I won't put it specifically on the president because everyone does. I'll just say the government of America suggested that if that happens, that's a red line, you know, for a U.S. military intervention. And it happened and it was proof. And then, you know, the ships were released to go push up to that part of the coastlines of that particular country. And yet it was an outcry of people throughout this country, to their congressmen, to their senators, even members of the military and the global community, that this will solve nothing for U.S. involvement to attack, no matter how strategic the strike may be. Other people are currently dying in mass in that particular country, you know, would suffer again, and it pulled them back. It opened up the room for diplomacy. You know, Russia stepped in, put something on the table. The global community was outraged, but it was people who were outraged. And what you're talking about here is conscious, being conscious to what's going on in your community. That's where it all starts, because it changes overnight with consciousness.
Right.
If people elect to say, if people say no, it's no. You know, at the highest level, where this president, you know, got some, you know, reestablished respect from me, he did pull up. And he even, President Barack Hussein Obama, he did pull up. Not so much got punked out. No, he didn't get punked out at all. He had to reason it out and look at, okay, you know, I can't go for this if people be instead. But when it was called for proof and the proof looked shady and the world was, like, condemning any kind of other military move, you know, he had the courage to say even his wife was against the strike, which would to a strike on Syria, which to me was a gateway that, you know, he's really not for it. You know, he has to do what he has to do as a leader. But now it's going to be diplomacy involved. You follow what I'm saying? And these people over there who are suffered insignificantly already within their own bounds, there won't be no United States intervention to sort that out just because you have the military power to do it. That's at the highest level of what takes place on world government and the highest levels of what takes place with military action and heads of state. So water that down to local community stuff and community issues, it's just a bunch of people who just don't give a frick. Period. Mm-hmm. Hey, so they're allowed.
But Mr. Tyler, let me ask you this, Eric. Okay, perfect example. I hear what you said, but perfect example,
okay,
when you
sure.
had Denver and they had the recall because of the people who passed gun legislation, it was like less than 11,000 people came out. All I'm saying again is, I go back when you have the Sean Hannitys and you have the people at Fox that fan these fires.
Correct. That's their job.
I call assassinating people. If you don't think like us and be like us, the white supremacy and the way they want to use things, and then you are immediately called either a coward, un-American, and this is what they do. So real quick, staying up on what you're saying, look at the gun rights after, as Gary talked about, you had all the young elementary kids get gunned down, nothing happened. But yet when they try to do a recall on them, look what happened. The people did say, no, we're not having this, so you're talking to them the same way.
And to your point, when you start dealing with the state of Colorado, while the city of Boulder is currently getting washed away off the map, you know what I'm saying? There's always repercussions. I'm not saying this is some karmic, you know, God-forced, you know, inflicting punishment. I just call it what it is. It's happening as we speak. But when you start talking about the state of Colorado, you start chopping that game up. Well, look what's going on with Colorado. Aurora, Colorado had that, you know, heinous cat go into the movie theater and kill. You had the Columbine issue take place in Colorado amongst young Caucasian youth. This was a Caucasian youth that did the Batman thing and shot people up. And, you know, and also Colorado may not be able to get it together when it starts coming down to gun control, but they sure can legalize weed. I mean, now they got weed tourism, so you know, people out there like to blaze weed. You know, you can walk
past
the state capitol in front of the police officers and have a bong in your hand, and it's all good.
I hear Michael Lewis in the background. Michael, are you there?
That's the state of Colorado to me.
I'm enjoying the wisdom as always. And as I was listening to Eric, I was thinking, you know, a lot of times we have to remember whether we agree totally with the president's policies or not. He's a very smart man, and he started off that whole Syria issue. He started off that whole Syria issue trolling for chicken hawks, because he wanted to make everybody who was getting paid by Israel have to back
him
and support him. And when they started to bitch up and got nervous because they actually might have to get into something serious, they all backed up. You know, Putin knew what time it was. All of this was done. I mean, it was. I won't say it was theater because lives were involved, but you have to remember, you know, in any situation, you always got pawns. And you always have the knight and the queen and the other major pieces and stuff like that to the issue. And he was playing multi-level chess, as he has been doing all this time. And the long and short of it is, folks simply can't hang. You know, he can't hang. This was Rui Lopez to the max, because he put everybody out there on Front Street and exposed their game. And everybody who had to speak up either had to speak up or shut up, and they all did.
Amen. Amen.
Exactly. And to Mike's point, what Putin, you know, Obama, when he went to Russia, he initially canceled the first meeting due to the Edward Snowden leaks about, you know, all the security leaks to the NSA, which has been heinous and criminal and everything else going on to man. And then, you know, and Putin said, you know, we'll house him, you know, get some intel from him and blow up our stuff, you know, duh.
Exactly.
And with that, he passed on that. But then the G20 meeting, he had to sit down with Alexander Putin, and Putin walks it like it talks it. And Putin, you know, in so many uncertain terms through detente and just, you know, suggestion, I'll unleash the gates of hell if it goes down in Syria, because they're a major gas and oil supplier to our nation, even though we have our own, you know, regions. But we can't sit idly by and let this go down. We will clap back. And the president looking at a situation of getting it really popping, and this is really not a jokes league, says, okay, do I want to really get into this kind of this level of engagement? Because at that level of force, you recognize force. But what has happened, and people can do the research on that, I won't quote the sources, is out there, is that when Michael mentioned Israel allegedly were trying to get it going or was behind the chemical attack, you know, the gas attack. And then with that person, you know, two missiles allegedly were heading to Syria from Israel, and the United States military intercepted both of them. The Navy was there to position keeping Israel shut down more than they were positioned to bomb, to upload against Syria.
Okay, I have a question for all three of you. Right, I've been thinking about this for a while. We could have now the political gamesmanship of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has played this game for the past 10 to 15 years, playing both sides of the cards. What is the role of Saudi Arabia in United States politics?
Well, listen, one, you can't say one without the other, Gary, because the House of Saud has always been involved in American politics.
Correct.
You know, we trained bin Laden. We trained the Mujahideen.
And Al-Qaeda
to hold serve in Afghanistan.
Yeah, we trained him.
I'm still trying to find out, you know, where Al-Qaeda holds its congressional meetings at.
Yeah, no, yeah, you know, having said that, you know, when we look at the backgrounds of the alleged hijackers who supposedly did what they did on 9/11, you know, there were no Afghanis there. There were no Yemenis there. You know, they were all Saudis. So
House of Saud.
You know, it's 2 + 2, but a lot of times people ain't adding up nothing when they, you know, are distracted by other things that are going on. So. You know, you can't separate one from the other. This is true misdirection, and this is the kind of stuff that you're not going to hear George Stephanopoulos chop up on ABC on Sunday afternoons, or Meet the Press, or Press the Meat, or whatever the hell is going on.
Yeah, Press the Meat. Yeah, I like that one. I really like that one.
The
Press the Meat for them fools.
The reason why I ask that question is because every conflict, the Saudis have been lurking in the background. Every time, mm-hmm. it's been Saudi, like, look, America needs to cut Saudi out of our business because
All about the money, baby.
It's so many hijinks and misdirections and undercuts and cloaking mechanisms, and the truth leaks out. But what happens in alternative media, which is what you can call what we do, because it's not mainstream, it's alternative.
True.
And alternative is the one that, you know, had the brakes pump with revealing facts and revealing information and showing photographs of, you know, the Kerry family, who's
yep.
part of the Hines family, you know, mm-hmm. empire, you know, with his wife sitting down with President Assad of Syria's, you know, husband and wife. And, you know, and one thing that since things have toned down in terms of, like, you know, the global conflicts, what you have in a country of Syria, it's like one of these countries that not only do they have all the natural gases, I mean, when you just look at the decadence and the absolute atrocity
yep.
that is current day mm-hmm. Libya.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You know, based on, you know, Gaddafi had his issues, but Gaddafi had a country where which was unbelievable for his citizens in terms of what they were provided with. Now, not to say he didn't have some global problems with America. One of the biggest things that he did that was really a shocking thing that was turned down, again, the research can be done, when he was going to give Louis Farrakhan, I believe in the 80s, like $1 billion so he
That's
could
right.
work with
yeah.
the black people in America, and I think
mm-hmm.
the Bush presidency
yeah, they,
said, no, nah, you can't do
off.
That. You know,
you
can't
yeah,
give $1 billion. He was going to get down like that, you know, and plus what he created in his country. You look at his leadership, not his dictatorship, not all his little other side jinks and problems and issues, because, yeah, he did some things wrong with his folks, and it was an unfortunate ending for him, but that's how it plays out in this global game. You know, one of his big things that he created in that particular Libya was almost these modern day fascination when he created this fresh water system.
Yes,
one of the world's
yes.
freshest water
yes.
systems can be found in Libya, and it's the same thing
yep.
that Syria has, because water is becoming a premium globally in
Eric,
terms
can
of being
I jump
a clean
on that?
Product.
Can I jump
yes,
on
sir.
That, Eric? Because as
yes,
we
sir.
Speak, Nestle, one of the largest companies in the world, has been waging terrorist campaigns against North America and other countries to basically bogart their water rights.
Yes,
the CEO of Nestle has gone on the record saying, you know, poor people should have to pay for water, that it's not something that's a birthright or anything like that, that we want it, we're going to take it.
Yeah.
There have been, so we just had an incident where Maine has fought back and fought off Nestle trying to sneak the water rights there. I just finished talking to a Canadian colleague who didn't know that British Columbia has been under siege by Nestle to try to snack off their water rights. So this, I mean, when the phrase was made in the movie Dune about water is life, you can't make it more plain than that. That's exactly right. And that is exactly why a sick bastard like the CEO of Nestle, who was going on the record, he was YouTube. There's a YouTube video. You all can Google it. This guy said straight up, you know, poor people should have to pay for water because we're not killing you all off fast enough. We need to bump you off. So if we buy up all the water,
if you can't afford it,
we're going to knock you off. Exactly. They need it.
Right, because, see, they need it. So, you know, I mean, you look at what that water, don't know the name of that oasis that was created, where he was able to utilize that money that they were making, you know, this being the government of, you know, Muammar Gaddafi. It was, you know, an incredible waterway of pure water. He changed the desert into an oasis. He didn't do the Dubai thing, you know, where we're going to create this real fancy place for elitism and build these things. You can do anything you want when you're making the oil revenues that these countries are earning. And now it's just tribes are ruling. It's just mismatched. You know, the number of, you know, ethnic Libyans who are black who go back to the kingdom of Abimelech, you know what I'm saying? Go back to that particular line. Libya was ancient Kush. Ancient Kush is the home of, you know, it was another part of our family lines that were particularly there. And Kush is pushed up in that whole valley, you know, when you take it over to where Iran, which is the Tigris, the Tigris-Euphrates civilization. You know, when you cross over, that's what that Hebrew just means, to cross over, from the word Ibri, which means to cross over, which means that when Abraham or Abu Rahim or Ibrahim and all the names they go by, you know what I'm saying, was just someone who crossed over. That's how he became the term Hebrew. Hebrew is nothing fancy thing. So these people are, again, claiming our ancient birthrights and calling themselves names, and that's why it was getting heavy. They had to import the Coptic Hebrews out of Ethiopia, who are still there in Israel as we right now, to bring in the real Jews.
That's right. That's
See, again, gentlemen, that's why we need to support Gary's show, Mike's show, and those who are open-minded, because, again, you have Negroes out there that will fight you tooth and nail when you try to bring this information. They're like, they will want to serve their master well. And
but
again,
you said
it best,
Reggie. You said it best. You said Negro. Negro is the word they use in front of necrophilia. You mean black dead.
That's right.
So why I'm not, I mean, I'm sorry, man. I ain't preaching to the black dead. You know what I'm saying? And they'll be your mortal enemies, you know. I mean, as public enemy says, and I won't use the word, there was a jigger behind the trigger that pulled it for Malcolm X.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Trust me, when I'm at the ATM machine at night and I see a brother with his drawers, you know, with his jeans halfway to the middle of his knees and a do-rag on his head and a funny walk, and he's with the three other jiggers, I ain't looking for the man. I'm looking at them jiggers. You know what I mean? So we got to keep this thing 100. You got people within your own family who are sick, ill, and depraved, and you got to call it like for what it is. And where they got Brother King, who had to snitch, Brother Martin Luther King, who had to snitch this lowlife who was working for the feds, who was his photographer, and had all that access to him, and such a piece of crap that when he died, he's the one that took that photo of a King with his jaw blown off, rest in peace, Brother Martin Luther King, with his jaw blown off in that hotel room. Yep. This jigger took that photo and then developed it the same friggin' day. Trust me, if that's my brother I'm in spirit with, not only am I not taking the picture, I'm sure not developing it. I'm looking for the fool who did it, you know what I'm saying, by any means necessary, or doing my best to try to get some kind of, you know, some love to this brother so he can heal and try to push through such a tragic event. Well, you got someone in his camp for years running with him doing this kind of crap. So you got to beware of these cats because these infiltrators are everywhere and they're going to do it. That's why they said, you've got to be able to discern. No more of this unity crap. No more talking about, woe to me crap. Discern who's coming at you because a lot of times, and we've talked about this a zillion times, in universality, if I go to the DMV, and Brother Reginald's got having a bad day, and he's giving me all this jigga attitude. And then all of a sudden, little Mary McGillicuddy comes over and says, "Sir, I can help you," and I'm out of there in 5 minutes because I'm getting ready to snatch this dude across the counter from being a jigga because that's all they really understand. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to sit around here and I'm not going to teach my children to do that. I tell them to love anyone. When I was coaching, I couldn't get a jigga to help me to coach me. I told a cat, listen, if a dude from Sri Lanka with blue skin and three heads wanted to come over here and say, "I'm down with your squad," I would see him like I was riding the Starship Enterprise where they had every species of being on that doggone ship, and there was never a conflict on what you look like or where you came from. It was all about your intelligence. Deal with people in their intelligence. Deal with people with their common sense and not get caught up in this other crap. There's some jiggers here, like it or not, that were Obama, but they were making more money under Bush. Now, I ain't just saying to say one policy was different than another. That's a fact. You know what I'm saying? So when I say this, I mean, I'm not going to sit here like you, my brother, and be wondering why I can't get the jigger out of the jigger on the corner that likes to hold up the wall and buying swishers from some East Indian cats who are shoving that crap down his throat every day, selling those marijuana joints so they can roll them up, selling that cheap liquor, selling to them underage so they can keep them stupid, where every one of these other nations in your community who ain't brothers and sisters who are coming from these other countries, these other nations, are using Martin Luther King's and the Civil Rights Movement groups and all those people we've talked about in the past as EEO laws and affirmative action laws that was created and are benefiting 5,000 times more than Negroes because they want to listen to Lil Wayne and, and twerk.
And that leads me to the next question. And the question of integration. And I believe the more I see it, the more I believe it. The integration was the worst thing that ever happened to African Americans. Because before integration, we have black restaurants, black movie theaters, black businesses, black lawyers, doctors,
right? Sounds like Harlem.
You can't find that.
That's right.
Back in the day. Sounds like Sugar Hill.
Yep. Sounds like Black Wall Street.
Tulsa. Oakland. A lot of our communes. I mean, where we had our own business is called the lottery. Now it's called the lottery. I mean, I always say, everyone loves this freaking Powerball and lottery system that the brothers created in these African American enclaves you're talking about. I mean, we created the lottery friggin' they call it numbers. And if someone don't believe us, go watch the Malcolm X movie with Denzel Washington when West Indian Archie was running the whole game.
In 1972, there were only three dates. Three that lotteries. Now you have 38 date lotteries. 38. And supposed to go to, this is the thing that gets me mad about this whole thing. It's supposed to go to education. Really?
Right. Right. Well, James Brown would talk about that when they called it the Chitlin' Circuit back in the day, where they go to these smaller venues and perform the BB Kings. But then when they start building the bigger venues, like we talk about these stadiums for these concerts and this, that, and the other, they paid more, so they sold out, and then all those other businesses fell by the wayside. Because it was about the money thing, and they went to the bigger venues because of the money scenario we talked about in the past. And Mike's show, Soul Tree Radio, Block Talk Radio, we talked about how it was a situation where McPhail, from that famous baseball McPhail family, M-A-C-P-H-A-I-L, were making statements about when they used to rent, they owned the Yankees during the days of the flourishing Negro Leagues, and they would rent out Yankee Stadium for the Negro League, like All-Star games and this and that, or contests. And they said, we'll never integrate baseball. He said McPhail was, they were the last to integrate black players anyway in the American League, and that was Elston Howard in the 60s. And it was a situation where he said, we will never rent out you know, we'll never allow Negroes, as they were called back then, you know, an opportunity to play in the major leagues because we make too much money renting out Yankee Stadium.
See,
you know,
and
for their Negro League All-Star games and all their particular contests. That's the kind of the history of these what they use with these venues and these stadiums per se. And then it really went crazy. You know, when you one of the most spectacular events of black unity that definitely had to scare, you know, that government at the time, probably the Nixon White House, was that Stax concert in Los Angeles.
Yes, White Stax.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
The watch that. I mean, when you look at the number of brothers and sisters that the frightening part about it to a lot of people, they didn't understand how many brothers and sisters lived, young brothers and sisters, lived in that part of Southern California.
That's right.
Okay, and that watch stacks to me, the dancing, the camaraderie, the no violence, the no conflict, the no broken beer bottle, the no weed smoke, the dignity that was in that facility for that many people,
and
how it's been fractured since. Do the math.
And you know why? Because then we were black and beautiful.
Unity.
Our whole mindset was 100% changed from not even a generation ago. From when if somebody were to call you black, it would start a fight.
I'm proud.
Now you're a generation removed. Someone calls you black. Thank you, baby. Because
hey, I got respect for you, Colin Kaepernick. But you know you're not an American.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Okay, he's an American. Ask Clay Matthews if he's seen you as an American.
There you go.
Well, he clotheslined. But guys, you know, again, the thing that gets me again, that you got Harbaugh. Harbaugh now standing up for this black quarterback.
He gets it.
He knows what the future. But, yeah, look at those people out there like the Mel Hodge and them. And he even got, your former
Merrill
coach
Hodge.
Of the Jets standing there kind of squashing them.
Can you stop using these cats' name
and
their network? Just call them. Give them a general term, please. They don't deserve no props.
Exactly. You have to remember
they never mention us. They're never mention us, and I want to give them dab because they're listening now. And I know whenever they listen, because once I go to their stations, they look constipated. So go ahead.
What we know for sure is that there has been a movement, whether said aloud or unstated, that when Doug Williams won that title, obviously he wasn't a starting quarterback when the year began, but the league does not want to see this. That is why there was so much copy that came out when Kaepernick usurped Smith's position as quarterback of the 49ers. Because they were essentially saying, what is wrong with you? How dare you let this Negro in here to run this team? We're supposed to go to the championship. And
Frisco.
You better believe, in my humble, had Smith been the quarterback of the 49ers and thrown that last pass, the flag would have went down for interference.
Yeah.
And the rest would have been, well, whatever happens. But the bottom line is, we have these quarterbacks in place. We have these young field generals in place.
General.
There's nothing they can do about it. We have a very calculating and strong-minded brother in Russell Wilson in one of the most melanin-deprived sections of the country. And they already understand that he is a leader, and they know that he can do great things for them. We already know that Michael Vick has endured for years, and we know that Cam Newton's going to have to endure.
And we know
that Colin Kaepernick's talent has made it clear to them that he's an obvious threat, which is why a melanin-challenged athlete like Matthews would only be fined $15,000, but Ndamukong Suh would get fined $100,000for what he did. So there are other issues that if these quarterbacks aren't aware, sad on them. But I digress. I feel they're very aware, and they know that now when we sit in those press boxes, if we get to sit in those press boxes, they have very few support because those who do sit in those press boxes are waiting for the right opportunity to attack them, just like that jackass did last year who attacked Kaepernick and his tattoos, not knowing that they were Bible verses on the tattoos. He didn't need to know. All he wanted was an ear.
Yeah, and then they tried to mess with the brother's emotions by digging up, you know, the mama who gave him away in the state of Wisconsin, you know, and he had to deal with that crap, and he handled it gracefully because he's too rocked up physically and mentally for that. And then back to Harbaugh, you know, I mean, I have to say this, you know, Mike Tomlin, you know, high on my list of coaches, but I've been checking out Harbaugh, you know, since he's been at Stanford. And he is a brother that gets it because he set the way for a brother, you know, since Dennis Green and Ty Willingham to coach Stanford.
That's
who's
right.
currently in place as the head coach of Stanford. That's one of Harbaugh's disciples, who was his offensive coordinator, who stepped right in and is doing work with that Stanford football team. You know, almost took down Notre Dame that got in the national championship game, but they got screwed on that 4th and inches when they almost beat Notre Dame last year at Notre Dame, the Stanford Cardinals. So that brother that's currently coaching Stanford right now, the name escapes me, Gary. What's his name? What's the brother's coach's name at Stanford?
Shaw.
Okay, yeah. Guys, think about this.
If Brian Shaw, Louisville Strong, Sumlin, Kevin Sumlin.
Mastermind.
Wait, if these three guys go undefeated, what is the NCAA going to do?
Not a damn thing. They tried to work. Manziel took all the heat because he got a Heisman under a brother. But, see, Harbaugh set the stage for this brother to check in. And when I seen Colin Kaepernick play, you know, he's from NorCal, Turlock, you know, area, you know. And when I seen Kaepernick play at Reno under that pistol option that coach was running, I was blown away. He wasn't a first-round pick. You know, I was with his size, his speed, his limp. I was like, who is this cat? You know, just stood out right away. But Harbaugh did it smooth. He didn't unleash Kaepernick to the gate, start giving him some plays, start bringing him shortly. Then last year, he said, the heck with it. Kaepernick's my guy. And they had Staley, Joe Staley, who stood up for Kaepernick when he got hit and went heads with Clay Matthews. You know, Harbaugh made comments you don't hear, you know, because he gets it because he's objective. Harbaugh said, Clay Matthews gets no respect. Next time you throw hands, make sure you knuckle up. You're throwing slaps. You've lost all respect as a tough guy because you didn't have no knuckles.
That's right.
That was out of Harbaugh's mouth. He said the cat didn't want to knuckle up. But one of the most incredible things that has been underplayed with this black quarterback eruption, as it's called, whatever, to me, has been when you know you're doing it when they rewrite the rules. When the NFL came up with that read option rule. You know what I mean? Of when to hit the quarterback, how to go at the pocket, what was illegal, what wasn't illegal. And Harbaugh's out there saying, man, you listen, this NFL read option rule is not only flawed, but he used the word we always use. It's biased.
That is.
Eric, Mike, this has been the history of all pro sports. Go back to Will Chamberlain.
Yes, sir. When you start the rule writing,
they
increased the lane and they took away the offensive goaltender.
That's right. Stop
now. Rules the dunk at UCLA.
It goes on and on.
Ali got they took 3 years from Ali. I tell you, it even gets heavy in the entertainment field. You know, Billie Holiday, you know, and Thelonious Monk, back in those eras, which they were prime. Thelonious Monk, to those who don't know, great jazz pianist, Billie Holiday, everyone kind of knows her. The lady sings the blue, you know, bassy, you know, one of a kind. You can hear every pain in the universe and in the world in a classy way heard when she sang. And, you know, they dried them up when they were rolling. Because in New York was where the money was with clubs, but they did in New York like they always do. You had to be licensed to play in these clubs. So when it didn't meet their statutes, they took away their license, and it dried them up. So whenever you this incredible talent, they dry you up. And then when Billie Holiday was in the, you know, was dying in Harlem Hospital, which had poor care at that time, and they had her, did you know they had her hand, the New York Popo, the police department, had her handcuffed to a bed so she couldn't get a fix. And the person she tried to give her some smack was Sinatra, and by the time he got there, she had already dried up and died. They had her handcuffed, you know, because they wanted to find her source. They wanted her off. It's like when the brother in the hood gets killed and they slow drive to the hospital and he dies on arrival, or they stop at every red light and go get some, you know, some McDonald's. You know, there's certain rules of engagement that take place in vulnerability that goes on here. So Harbaugh realized that this read option rule as smart as he is as a coach, as cagey as he is as a coach, to take Singletary's same players and, you know, be in a conference championship one year and to be in a Super Bowl the next, you know what I'm saying? You know, he understood, like, I mean, this is some biased crap. Basically, you know I'm a smart cat, and I got a quarterback that can is playing within your rules. So what did the NFL does? They flip the rules.
Hold on, Gary. Let's remember this first game that was played. The Packers spent the whole offseason trying to pick up on this read option. I mean, they were looking at every bit of information. They thought they was going
to
be ready as Freddy.
And he went
and
to the
pocket. And what did Kaepernick do? He threw four bills against the defense that was supposed to be highly rated. From the pocket, he beat them with their own weapon, and they still couldn't handle it. And what did we see? We still saw only a $15,000 fine for a deliberate attempt to injure. Deliberate attempt. Let's not pretend. He launched himself. He was 5 yards out of bounds, and he's 3 inches shorter than Kaepernick, but he reached up for his neck. That's a
clothesline.
He had his
fist, on his Adam's apple while he was still on the ground, applying pressure.
The knee did very little.
But if James Harrison hits poor little Colt McCoy,
hello.
See you later, James Harrison.
Tom Brady? Oh, you kidding me? Oh,
he went down for Colt McCoy on the field in bounds.
Yeah. The rules, and that amazes me about black players. They always rise above the rules. They always rise. Look,
yeah,
Kareem,
that's true.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, okay.
Scott Hook time. Yeah, the greatest weapon in sports.
Which no one has been able to duplicate since.
I mean, yes, the rhythm, the motion, I mean, the pirouette, the timing, the coordination, the balance, the control, the finesse, the touch. It's just so many things, the pirouette. It's just so many things working in that shot. That is, he was a fan of jazz growing up, and it's all just reminiscent of his finesse game that he was able to master at 7'2", and to this day still the league's leading scorer all time.
Yep.
No one will break his record. That's one record that won't be broken.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, no one will be Malone came close, and he still needed like 2 or 3 years. Karl Malone, he still needed about 2 or 3 years. And with his game and the way he wanted to play physical and play in transition, when he got older, there's just no way he was going to be able to average enough to do that. Jordan would have broken it had he not retired twice. He's another one that was too good for the game. Bettors could not win when he played. I mean, the Lions were done. Whenever he played, Chicago was winning. And, you know, when he played, it kind of freed up the Lions again. Maybe that's a conspiracy theory, Mike.
Anymore. I think a lot of times, especially in the HBCUs, they want to casually forget that even though athletics help to build the bridge, you know, they want to turn off the faucet and say, you know, they want to eschew the fact that athletics carried them where they did and concentrate on the academics. And I don't have a problem with academics, but if you don't understand the big picture, then you've already put yourself in a vulnerable position. There wouldn't be a Grambling University without Coach Robin at football program.
Right.
that was a little backwater school. The trains didn't even stop in Grambling, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And
it was
Coach
called
Rob,
Teachers College, right? Back then,
that's
Mike?
Right.
It was called
Grambling
okay.
Teachers College. And Graham and Coach Rob made that into a viable institution that reaches into streams that very few HBCUs are even allowed to.
Yeah,
that's real.
They want to mess with that simply because of hubris, you know, for somebody who, in all intents and purposes, is a hero, not just to HBCUs, but to the black college experience at all, for what he endured, and now he's stuck to being true to himself and Douglas Williams. So whatever Grambling thought they were doing in terms of doing the right thing, I would go so far as to say that their thought process is misguided, at the very least.
Yeah,
I think it's a very bad president, because Doug Williams is, to me, an HBCU. What he did in college and pros, what he did for the Washington Football Club, being the first African American to win the Super Bowl, what more do you want the guy to do?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the fact that when people think of great coaches, you know, Eddie Robinson is not mentioned, you know, at worst past the fifth name if you come up with a top five coaches, regardless of ethnicity, male or female, you know what I'm saying? Or globally, anywhere that he's not
exactly.
mentioned, you know, for just the sheer power of his stamina and the sheer power of his conviction and the sheer power of his dedication to have lasted and endured through so many cycles of time. You know, during so many different eras of changes and what was taking place in a very heinous time of civil rights and where the soil of the South is stained by our ancestors, you know, and, you know, so many other situations that take place, and be able to thrive in that environment and to create, you know, this HBCU environment where when people think Grambling, they may think of their band. I remember the first Super Bowl, you know, the halftime entertainment was provided by Grambling University. You know, that Packer Chiefs Super Bowl, I believe. You know, the halftime entertainment was Grambling. Back to that Watt Stacks thing a few years later, right in the same environment. You know, maybe Grambling broke that in, huh? But,
no joke.
You know, who knows, you know. But, you know, the whole thing being is you have, you know, someone as legendary, you know, and real, not just a myth, as, you know, Coach, you know, Eddie Robinson and, you know, Doug Williams being a disciple of, you know, Coach Robinson and what's taking place. It just goes to show, you know, the utter lack that some of these young people have for their historical relevance, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, to them, you know, to them, they've been so caught up on this holographic fast track that if they're not upgrading their cell phones or their Twitter accounts every day, some new little gimmick or widget comes out, they're not up to speed yet. They have no conscientious to the, you know, the foundation of what their ancestors created and what these people have done to help position them, you know, because when you look at, you know, the just incredible histories from the gridiron level, the contribution of HBCUs, you know, from all the, you know, the brothers, I think there's been at least four or five, you know, Super Bowl MVPs that came from, you know, HBCUs. You know, I know
exactly.
Richard Dent at Tennessee State and Doug from Grambling and Jerry Rice from Mississippi Valley State. And I know I'm probably missing some people, but
there were at least another four or five that should have been MVPs, but they weren't allowed to go to Disney World, but I digress.
Oh, exactly. So, you know, so whatever took place with Doug, I think that the way I look at it without knowing the politics of taking that Grambling, I really don't have much of a sympathy for the brother, you know, in terms of, you know, how it went down, because he was one of the brothers that helped push Coach Robinson out,
mm-hmm.
you know, unfortunately, you know.
It's
so
true.
That
true.
Was the ultimate betrayal for me. Mm-hmm. And that, at that point, I lost a lot of respect for Doug Williams, not his theatrics as a player, but the fact that he was groomed by Coach Robinson to get to
exactly.
the height, to become a top pick. People forget that when he was with the terrible creamsicle uniform Tampa Bay Buccaneers of the 70s.
I like the Coach,
the team was terrible, but the creamsicle, the orange cream was cool. You know, but he was the coordinator. He almost, they lost to the Rams and Ferragamo on them. I mean, he almost took them to the Super Bowl with nothing. He almost put a LeBron with Cleveland
move. Exactly right, with nothing.
Nothing, Tampa Bay. And he was a quarterback of that team just on leadership alone. And at that time, he sung the praises, and rightfully so, of Coach Eddie Robinson. Then when Coach Rob got a little older, yeah, he got a little senile, he's losing touch. You know, he has sacrificed so much. He did lose a pound of blood, you know, hanging in there as long as he did, dealing with the obstacles, not getting the justified respect he was supposed to get. You know, yep. I remember George Steinbrenner used to, you know, allow Graham, you know, he's the one that allowed, you know, back to that Yankee Stadium things and our, the history with black in the Negro Leagues utilizing it. He's the one that created that game that they had where Grambling would come up to
That's
Yankee
right.
Stadium every year
Urban
to play
Classic.
A game.
Urban
yeah,
League
what's called Urban Classic.
Urban League Classic. Mm-hmm.
And Grambling always came up. That was a way for people in the north, you know, northeast who heard all about the Grambling marching band and Coach
That's
Rob
right.
to go pack Yankee Stadium and go see Grambling. They always did well when Grambling came up.
Yes, they did.
With poor marketing, extremely poor marketing. You know, no billboards, no, you know, online ads. And yet people showed up through word of mouth. And Steinbrenner, you know, George Steinbrenner, former owner of the Yankees, used to call Eddie Robinson, like, he's the greatest American I know.
It was like going to a Maze concert. You know, Frankie, Beverly, and Maze never advertised.
Yes,
but when you find
exactly.
out they're in the area, people go.
Packed. You know, yeah, and so that chimes back into the point. So with Doug, yeah, you know, it was, I thought he was lucky to get the second job, you know, after what happened with Coach Rob the first time.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, with him being outed, you know, it kind of, you know, I'll just, you know, go there on – we'll call it fiction. I'll just call it the ghosts of Eddie Robinson's have spoken.
Mm-hmm.
I want to move on. The Washington Football Club and Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell mysteriously changed his tune this week. I wonder why. Anyway, I think the movement is getting its legs. And we as African Americans need to push this thing all the way to the limit. What I'm going to do this week, I'm going to gather all my articles on the Washington Football Club and send them to Master Goodell this week. Because he said if one person is offended by his name, he would look into it. Well, guess what? I'm going to send him a whole package.
Well, it's interesting that you said that, Gary, because we have to give some love to LeVar Arrington, who is down there in the D.C. area on one of the main sports stations, 106.7. And Cowboy Reggie has mentioned this a few times, so it's not like I'm just coming out of the woodwork with this.
Right.
But Arrington, playing for Washington's football club, put Goodell's ass in the fire because he has credibility as a former player. He has credibility as somebody outspoken to say, you know, I know the difference between Ish and Shinola. And he said straight up to Goodell, what time is it? Because you said straight up. Snyder said he's never going to change the name. Now, we know you work for the owners, so whatever you say is a parroting of what the owners are saying. So the reality is, this is all nothing but a movement whose time it is has come to pass. And it will get changed. The irony of all of it, though, is that that little son of a bitch, Snyder, is going to make more money off the new name of the team than he'll ever make off the original name of the team. If the name would be changed to, say, the Washington Warriors, and, you know, you got no issue with the logo or the colors or anything like that, he's going to make more money off of it.
Yeah.
And we already know the team is almost worth $2 billion. So it's a smoke and mirror situation because he's going to eventually capitulate because public opinion will turn the tide against it. But he ain't doing it out of the goodness of his heart. He ain't doing it because he saw the light and said and some stuff like that. He's doing it out of shrewd financial interest. That's all.
I missed the brother who was the mascot, who was a black Indian. He was really keeping
that
100.
Idiot. Oh, yes.
He was really keeping that 100. That's
for
funny,
real.
Man. You know, but. That's just sidebar to your point, but you're right about all that. I mean, I've never dug the name Redskins and never been a fan just by virtue of the title.
Exactly.
You know, Cleveland Indians. You know, that caricature and that hat has always distressed me. You know, as far as like, you know, how can anyone be an Indian fan, you know, just based on their logo,
exactly.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
when you think about the amount of money and marketing that is spent to come up with a logo. you know, for the sports team, for the marketing enterprise, and how if you change your logo, how you're like a year out before it's accepted because it has to go through all these different measures and these testings and these marketing testings and what color. They just don't throw these things together overnight. So, yeah,
well,
you know, I mean.
Eric, I looked up the Cleveland Indian logo. It goes back to 1950. And 1950, guys, is so bad. It's so idiot.
The Indians logo?
It was horrible. It was,
okay.
The day
they
was
in
the
Cleveland,
that was in
1915.
It was terrible.
Right. Yeah, it's a terrible logo. I mean, I got, you got the Atlanta Braves, you know, and they're whoa. I mean, come on.
What the Atlanta Braves did, I respect the Atlanta Braves. So what they did was they took everything off the their uniforms. Everything off of the logos, everything's gone. All in there now is the name either Atlanta or Braves.
Yeah, see, tribal names. Tribal names works as well as artifacts. Like, you know, we know that, you know, like Thunderbirds, Tomahawks. Okay, I can get with that because those are symbols of use and part of a cultural history.
Exactly.
You can't escape the Native American, you know, history in this country because, you know, the Tar Heels is based on an Indian tribe, not to mention all these states that are named after Indian tribes, from Delaware to Utah to City of Seattle, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, all that Native American tribes. The Seminoles, you know, I mean, that was a black tribe down there, you know, in South Florida, Florida State Seminoles. Okay, so those are tribal names. I mean, a tribal name I get, but, you know, St. John's at least, you know, they were the Redmen. You know, St. John's University was the Redmen, so they flipped it to Red Storm.
That's right.
The Redmen, the people been the Redmen, nothing to do with Indians. It was about the
correct. You know, I mean, the Seahawks, I mean, these type of names, I mean, you know, I mean, even if you, you know, the Washington Comanches, you know what I'm saying? They ain't going to use those names because they were kicking butt so long, which created the Texas Rangers.
Exactly.
But that's another story. But, you know, if you that conceptual idea, you know, works, but Redskins is just as racist and biased and filthy McNasty as it comes, because that's what, you know, settlers called, who weren't native to these lands, who broke every treaty with these people, called the native inhabitants in which they were conquered, the Redskins.
But also, the name really came from is when the Cowboys used to kill Indians, and they used to scalp the Indians, and they would bleed red. That's where they came from.
Correct. Yeah, the Texas Rangers too, and that's just what they called it. You know, they're always pigment crazy, and it also was a pigment description too. You know, of their skin and the blood that was spilled. You're right. You know, and you know, I mean, the thing is, just on that name alone, I've always, you know, when people would always mention, you know, Cowboys playing, I always called them Washington.
Yep.
You know, I never called them the Skins. I always called them Washington. You know, I mean, you know, and the thing. Go ahead, brother.
It intrigues me when ESPN is talking about the Washington Football Club. Look at the faces. I see, I never watched the announcers look when they say the name, and it's almost like they're smiling when they say the name. It's like, okay, I get this.
Gary, you got to remember, too.
I really question that. When somebody's smiling, they'll do that other team but that team.
Well, you got to remember as well, Gary. Now, there have been dribs and drabs of people who are saying, we're not going to do this anymore. A couple of websites, aside from Black Athlete, which has always done it ever since its existence, said they're not going to use it anymore. Peter King, who is supposedly this great Grantland Rice writer, but I digress, has said that he won't use their name anymore. So ESPN being in bed with the National Football League is between a rock and a hard place again, as they were before when they had put out the miniseries Playmakers, and the NFL said, if you're going to be our partner, you better turn that crap off because you're telling too much truth about what's really going on in the league.
Yeah.
ESPN has they have no choice but to go along with this. And
like they pumped them on the concussion story, right?
Mm-hmm. just like they punked him on the concussion story, they know that they are the NFL's bitch, and they're going to have to do exactly what the NFL tells them to do. So anybody who's working for ESPN, or I take anything they say literally with a grain of salt, even the one who's supposed to be the supposed journalist in Bob Lee, you know, he's got a leash only as long as from my hand to my elbow, because they know he can't really be a reporter either. So anything they throw out is drivel. Here's a clear indication of what we're talking about. When we did our show last week, Wednesday, the Hump Day special, our brother Patrick Farrar came in and told us about Mark Sanchez throwing with his other hand. Now, that show was over at 11 o'clock or 11:20 or so. An hour and a half later, ESPN is flashing breaking news. Mark Sanchez to get year-end surgery. Now, where do you think they got that from? You know, now I'm not saying that we're all that.
No, you're
the
saying that
line,
you tell it like it is, man. Go ahead.
Exactly. Exactly.
Go ahead.
And the word Don't came stop. Out, and they just had to suffer and deal with it because, shit, these guys beat us to it. It's not that we beat it to it. We've always beaten you to it. It's
cool
a matter
up.
Of people listening. So the bottom
yeah, no
line
pulling
now
up.
Is that people can't stand it anymore, and they're going to have to find a way to walk a line. But, you know, from all my previous history, whenever you try to walk the line, you get run over in both directions.
We got a caller at 707. Come on in, 707. You're on the air, caller.
Okay, 707. I've been lurking here, and I think today you had one of the most robust and active discussions you've had in a... Well, you always have good discussions, but I think today things were really going off in every direction.
Okay.
The fundamental
you.
Issue here on this read option quarterback, I think, is the emergence of nine black quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, nine.
Yeah, go for it.
And that's the new phenomenon. So all of a sudden, and I think you did hit on it, that there's been rule changes in the past, but all of a sudden we see this rule change emerge as
right.
the nature of the game changes.
Right.
As the nature and the color of the quarterbacks change.
Right.
And I wonder if this can kind of analogize to the belief that at a given point in history, basketball was thought to become more of an urban game.
Correct.
Ending from the playground game than what it had been before as a predominantly Caucasian college game.
Yeah, I hear you. You're dead on it.
As you know, as it goes to the history of all sports, each game has done this. Basketball, baseball, hockey, I guess it's ever hockey. They didn't cross red lines before, and they had the black players up in Canada. And Mike can tell you more about that. See, hockey is the best game in the world now because Canadians.
Well, Gary, I'm glad you said that because it's not just football we're talking about. The NHL, the National Hockey League, is going to have to cross that same Rubicon because now it's getting darker. And players who had the skills always, and I'm talking about going as far back as Herb Carnegie, God rest his soul, you know, are now getting the exposure. And they all realize the NHL now has to come to the reality that it's best man plays. So the last Stanley Cup champion, the Chicago Blackhawks, had people of color signing that Stanley Cup. Ray Emery, Jamal Mayers, Johnny Aduya. You know, they are now part of the pantheon of champions. And there are at least 26, 27 other black players in high-profile markets like Philadelphia where Wayne Simmons is, or Winnipeg, where Dustin Byfuglien is, and Evander Kane. You know, we are all over the map, and the NHL hasn't had that end moment yet where they realize we can't squelch this talent anymore. It's coming out. And now Pookie and Junebug, God forbid what happens if they get to put on skates too, because we know, even though Cedric the Entertainer made a joke about it, there's a reality to that. When you got a big 6'5", 280-pound player like Dustin Byfuglien knocking Chris Pronger into submission and literally into retirement that allowed Chicago Blackhawks to win their first Stanley Cup, there were a lot of people who were taken aback by that. And when Dustin Byfuglien raised the cup, they were booing him. And they weren't just booing him because he was the opposing player. They weren't just booing him because He was a Chicago Blackhawk. I said, this black SOB knocked out one of our white heroes, and we really don't like it. And the NHL can't come to grips with that reality. You better believe the NFL ain't coming to that reality either.
Well, you know, I mean, to the caller's point, you know, what he, you know, astutely was talking about was, you know, the time frame of when we talked about the rule changes, you know, when Will Chamberlain came in, how they changed the lane, you know, and the illegal rules that forced him to leave Kansas University when they lost that national championship game, the way they were able to defend him and frustrate, you know, that situation. You know, that was no fun in that. And the professional leagues had a rule where he really couldn't, you know, go pro that time frame. So he joined the Globetrotters and toured before going to the NBA and just shredding it, you know, averaging like 50 a game and just unbelievable statistics. I still think he has over 100 records to this day, you know, in the NBA. Exactly. But it was all relegated when he first showed up on the scene. And this would happen with Colin Kaepernick. It was basically the culmination of Kaepernick being affiliated and associated with Harbaugh, because he only started like six games or seven games, the last seven games of the season. Then Harbaugh was able to take those tools and those, that skill set after developing it with film study talent and, you know, Kaepernick getting physically stronger, which he didn't start in when he came in the league. And when Kaepernick, you know, in the heart of the Bay Area, you know, California, they got every level of, you know, physical structure, technology you can imagine to get up to speed. Look at them cats in Hollywood. They can be 500 pounds in 1 week, 225 in 3 months. You follow what I'm saying? So they're able to download all this, you know, advanced stratagems and fitness formats, and Kaepernick was able to do that. He was always a bright person. So he not only was he a physical talent, which they could deal with Michael Vick a little bit because he wasn't that strong in stature. Kaepernick's about 6'6 and rocked up, from, you know what I'm saying, in terms of that athleticism with the physical skill set. Plus, he can throw, and he's patient, and he's being coached up to the fullest. You got to illegal that. And that just reminds me that it's not only universal to a player of any kind of magnet. That's what happened with, and we've talked about this in the past, with Sean Payton. You know, the year, you know, a 5'10 Drew Brees almost, you know, threw 70%, completed 72% of his passes and 50-plus touchdown passes and set a record for yardage. In the same season, Payton had the whole thing figured out, how they played on that turf. I mean, the Giants won the Super Bowl that year, and they beat the Giants down there by 45 points, made them look like scrubs when they came out there to the Superdome. So Payton ends up suspended. We find out all the rules were trumped up. Why? Because the Super Bowl was going to be in New Orleans that year, and there was just no way that in New Orleans, in place and position that high, was not going to end up in that friggin' Super Bowl based on Payton being the head coach. They sidelined him. Suspended him for the whole year, gutted the team, and we found that most of the suspensions and everything else was purely fiction.
Yep.
So we got to be 100 with everything, you know, which we do on this show when we talk about it, because it comes to that level of dominance. So the league was scared. You know, Wooden talked about that when Kareem played his first game at the time at UCLA. John Wooden, his coach at UCLA in the 60s, when he was known as Lou Alcindor, he made sure that, you know, when his first public display on the varsity, because they had that freshman rule where he couldn't play as a freshman because of the freshman rule. Freshmen were bound to play. And that was the year that when UCLA was coming off a national championship, and rest in peace to my main man, Walt Hazard, you know what I'm saying? Because I've had a chance to break bread with who passed not too long ago, great brother, you know, who played on John Wooden's first national championship team. It was an NBA stalwart. You know, when he played that first particular game, you know, Wooden told him in the varsity game, I want you to dunk everything in sight. I want to send a message out there. We're not to be played with, and neither you. And that's when they banned the rule, because Wooden had him dunk crazy when he first started playing. You know, he commanded him to be a, you know, to dunk crazy, and he wanted to send a message to the nation, you're going to get three more years of this. You know, and, you know, he won the national championship every year he was there. And the year that he was a freshman, he played in the freshman game against UCLA, UCLA's varsity, you know, as it was called back then, because they had a freshman team, varsity team, was number one in the nation. They lost by 30 points to the freshman team in an inter-squad scrimmage, you know, headed by Lou Alcindor. So they seen this coming, so this is what they invoke. When Muhammad Ali just was doing things that no man has done and no man has seen since, no heavyweight in this world had had such a poor defense and could just survive defensively strictly off reflexes. He had no physical defense. He didn't block punches. He He's rolled with them or ducked them and always had his hands low because he trusts his physical speed. And at the height they pulled him out, his hand speed was so incredible. They still call the punch he actually delivered on Sonny Liston the invincible punch. That's how fast his hands were. They had to ban him. It was a fear factor. And if no one thinks it's a fear factor, one thing One Network did real well, they did a story on Marcus Dupré, the greatest that never was.
That's
about
right.
This brother. You know what I'm saying? That was as good as it gets for me because that was an exceptional, well-done series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just basically Marcus Dupré was could have been, even by his coach Barry Switzer, the greatest back ever. And to this day, with all the Heisman Trophy winners, Barry Switzer, who won a Super Bowl with the Cowboys coach, he said that Marcus Dupré was the greatest athlete, greatest football player he ever had. But
that's right.
Yeah, exactly. And he had one of the and at that time they were running that triple option. You know what I'm saying? With Jamel Holloway and them brothers, you know, with the great names from them days that have been the Busta Rhymes and the I Am Hips.
Yep.
You know, sorry, Busta Rhymes, the rapper. You got that from the brother that played halfback for Oklahoma Sooners in the late 70s. So there was a Busta Rhymes, B-U-S-T-H-E-R, Rhymes back then. Check it out. And Busta Rhymes was playing. And Switzer said, you know, during that time frame, you know, not only was Dupré the greatest talent, but, you know, they were coming off national championships during that year. When Oklahoma was running it on the college game, much like Alabama is now. And they interviewed one of Dupré's coaches in this series, you know. And he said that Marcus Dupré was so friggin' talented and was so good and so gifted, we didn't know what to do. And that, to me, that was the most oxymoronic, craziest statement a big-time Division I college coach could ever make. Over amongst the talent. What do you mean you don't know what to do? You unleash the talent. You put in a position to be successful. But that's how it was at that time frame. Sometimes there's brothers and sisters, there's such an ignorant, so talented that come along, they don't know what to do with it, so they try to destroy it. And that's what the Oklahoma coaches did. They made it rough for him. He wouldn't bow down. Switzer tried to turn him into a linebacker. Dupré was like, I'm the best back in the nation. I got the leading rusher all-time prep player, and they want me to be a linebacker? How do you do this crap? But this is what happened. So there was a lot of great talent that Michael talked about with these quarterbacks that happened. And then this brings me to this point that hasn't been touched upon that I just want to touch on. Every accommodation was made for a certain quarterback to be like a read option player, get past all his weak points, try to be a star. Tim friggin' Tebow. A whole network through their whole licensure and their whole credibility behind this person. And he can't even get an Arena Football League contract today.
Not just that, Gary. It was his own arrogance to sit straight up. You know, I am an NFL quarterback. I will keep going until I am an NFL quarterback. Now, there may be one little rat hole that might take him in Jacksonville because that's where his whole hero thing developed. But listen, there are quarterbacks from the CFL that can come down here and do damage and win games in the NFL immediately that I know for a fact, having been up there, coached it, seen it in front of my own eyes. I know that there are quarterbacks.
Allen kid.
Damon Allen, Anthony Calvillo. There was at least five or six of them who came in here and won and made championships here as well. But having said that, there are quarterbacks in the NFL right now that would go up to the CFL and get embarrassed. Believe me, after Ferragamo won his MVP award for the losing team for the Rams, he came to Canada, he got his ass handed to him. So it's not about if it is football. If you can ball, you can ball. It doesn't matter where. Tim Tebow never could ball because it was always situations that were designed for him. When he came to play at Florida, it was Chris Leak who had done the heavy lifting, who went 90 yards down the field. He comes in for 10 yards and scores a touchdown. That's bull, you know, and that nonsense perpetuated into the NFL. But see, just like with art, with music, with anything involving where you really have to have a serious proficiency, once you get to that microphone and open your mouth, people will know whether you can or can't. His microphone was the NFL, and everybody found out that he couldn't sing, euphemistically speaking. And the only way he's going to get over is if the NFL has plans for
auto-tune.
The long term. Exactly. Auto-tune for real. That's exactly right.
In the world
where you have to be a real musician, Tim Tebow is auto-tune. That's a great analogy.
But Tim Tebow was never. You had to be trained. You had to be trained to be equipped, and he was never. The guy was never trained. How can you be equipped when you only run 20 yards? I mean, for 3 years, you go 20 yards. You know, I'm not training. Tebow was down the bell. He was dead in the field because Florida did to him.
His defense carried him to the point where he had an opportunity to succeed. It's as simple as that. They never gave the defense anywhere near the amount of credit they should have gave them for keeping him in it. Had Tebow been black, they would have said it was about the defense. And that's the thing we have to remember. As we talk about this, we come back full circle to what you just said about black quarterbacks. Whatever they do, their highs will get downloaded or downplayed, their lows will be magnified, and unless one of them carries that trophy home, they'll still say they're not ready for prime time, even though we know the league will be working overtime, whether it's in the embodiment of somebody like Jeff Fisher on the competition committee or the league officials who will make points of calling penalties at certain times to disrupt the flow of the quarterbacks as they're making that winning drive. We know at some point there will be some point of compromise that these guys will have to overcome in addition to achieving on the field and making sure that the results on the scoreboard matter most in their favor.
Well, let me throw this out now. You have 9 guys now carrying that attack forward, and very
right.
likely more guys coming in the years ahead. So
right.
it's not like we're just seeing, you know, one person who's going to, you know, get the short shrift here. You've got, you know, 9 people, several of whom, Kaepernick, RG3, Cam Newton, really have superior skills.
Correct.
So it's a strong statement that's going to be made, which the league is going to have a very hard time. Yes, you know, on individual plays, they can try to shift the result, but when you have 9 players, at least 3 of whom have superior skills, and
right, and
the
fans demand it. And the fans demand it. You know, I mean,
exactly.
The teams that are having these players play, I mean, they're behind it. You know, because they just want to see the success of that particular rate. The old paradigm is the one that unfortunately is shifting because they have no choice.
That's right.
And where I deem this thing, I go back to, again, you know, the point we talked about with Harbaugh and the fact that he paved the way for Shaw to come in and coach, and he's done an exceptional job. Stanford did not fall by the wayside, nor did they lose any recruits. They still recruit well. They're still able to meet that high standard of academia recruits need to have, and they're playing exceptional football on the field. And he was groomed by the person, when Bill Walsh was at Stanford. He's the one that created that training program for African-American coaches, with led to Denny Green and Ray Rose, other brothers getting jobs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a whole slew of individuals to come through. So what's transpiring with that, you know, when you come up with that kind of read option pro style, you know, offensive attack that, you know, the Niners were so successful in, especially with the kind of spectacular athlete that Kaepernick is, not only as a quarterback, a thrower, and a guy that can have recognition and intelligence, and the players can get behind him just on presence. He doesn't have to be an over-emotional leadership per se. What transpired with this rise is the elimination of, you know, the brothers who are now coaching, which Wash had set up in place for the qualified coaches, because last year I think there was as many openings as there ever had been, and there was not a brother who was qualified that was calling, even under the so-called Rooney Rule.
Although Lovie
Smith, that's what's transitioned with, yeah, you get the player in the leadership position and, you know, executing it, but the leadership face behind it is struggling with the higher job because of that particular place. So it's always that subtle trade-off that old paradigm and these old owners do, because with the NFL team being this, every franchise in the NFL is practically $1 billion, $100 million franchise. The TV revenues are through the roof. You know, I mean, it's just astronomical the money these owners are making. They pay that $765 hush money these broken down players who are going to get $170K each. And I guess if it's dried up for you, that feels like money, but it goes quick. $170K, and who's to say if it was taxable or not? that the NFL owners were able to shell out $765 million without ever admitting that, yeah, we realize this causes concussions, where they have no repercussions from that particular portion. So when you look at that standpoint, you look at the ownership, right, that's what hasn't changed. You still have Ralph Wilson, you know, in Buffalo. You got the Hunt family in Kansas City. These are original owners of franchises. They don't sell. You've got the guy there in a with the Tennessee team, that's there. They gave the guy from East India, you know, the magnet from the steel company, the Jacksonville Jaguars, good luck with that because they have the worst attendance. But there's still a team that, you know, has certain kind of issues. It's now just making sure it's streamlined that those who are qualified to coach and have the talents to coach and can be a leadership in the NFL, they still have to magnify. And that did not take place. They recycled some old coordinators, Chazinski in Cleveland, Tressman in Chicago, following, Lovie Smith had a 10-6 season and had to endure injuries to his quarterbacks and a crappy offensive line that was poorly drafted. Mm-hmm. And he's out the league and he's not even assistant nowhere. So there's still, and Andy Reid gets recycled in the Kansas City. He followed,
after
Cornell, who had that tragedy. You know what I'm saying? That took place with that player committing suicide outside the, stadium per se, and that was given false data. There's a lot of crap. So there's a lot of situations going where I can see a guy like Herman Edwards, who I thought was, a good leader of men, should be in the mix for some type of coaching type position, as well as others. If you can recycle, Andy Reid and some of these other people, you can recycle a Herm Edwards or somebody like that who's got leadership, capabilities as well. So I think where the player on the field is showing his talents, that's never been a problem. You still need the leadership, the front office power as well in your general manager jobs as well as your head coaching jobs.
And you need to understand the business paradigm aspect of that.
Thank you.
When the Seattle Seahawks decided that it was a better business decision to start Russell Wilson rather than see if their $15 million that they spent on Flynn would be working on the field. For whatever I may like or dislike about Pete Carroll, they made the proper business decision. This kid, referring to Wilson, can play. And Wilson literally got them within one defensive lapse away from going to the Super Bowl. So we know for a fact Seattle made the right decision based on the fact that it was a combination of talent and action by the front office to not let that $15 million get in the way of the price of doing business. Now, Flynn has moved on. Seattle has moved on. And as he moved to Oakland, Oakland had to make a similar decision because they gave Flynn another $10 million. So I know Flynn has got to be the happiest SOB in the NFL right now because he's making $25 million in 2 years, and he hasn't had to lift so much as a clipboard. But now Oakland had to do the same thing, and Oakland had to make that decision on the fact that Pryor will help us save our investment because our line is so bad that if we put Flynn out there, he'll get killed. So they did it. They did it for a different reason.
He was horrible in preseason, man.
Exactly.
From my analysis, on that, Mike, and to your point, to the point, you're correct with that, but Flynn was heinous in preseason. He was getting sacked. He was getting rid of the rock. The Oakland fans were calling it. And brother McKenzie, Reggie McKenzie, it's not Raleigh. I knew he had a brother.
That's
it's
right.
Reggie,
that's
right? Reggie McKenzie's the GM of the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Reggie. When young Allen, Mark Davis took over for Al Davis, and he put Reggie in that position, and again, it was no way Terrell Pryor was not going to be a starting quarterback. So they rolled the dice and then some when they drafted that cat, Jamarcus Russell, which was an utter waste because he just was not the person character-wise.
He
was more into the money than to the position, correct.
Mm-hmm.
He had the physical skills, but he liked the money too much, and Al did everything did everything possible. Babysit, everything possible.
Yep.
Had a guy make sure he got to practice, to the game on time, just crap.
Yep.
But Al's last move, before, passing was he took Terrell Pryor in the third round of the supplementary draft where he was basically the only player worth drafting, and every team in the league passed on him twice before Al did in the third. And so it was a matter of time before Pryor was going to get a good look and be that quarterback of that team. And based on, who's the ownership and who was done, he's seeing his father's last draft pick starting quarterback. So
that's
that goes back to Al again. So Al's fact of just wanting to see who was winning is the reason why Terrell Pryor's out there. He ran for 112 yards. Anyone hear about that? With 13 carries. But you heard about two picks. his two or three picks. You didn't hear that part. You know, they should have won that particular game. You know, he made a little judgment.
He put him in position to win, at least.
And absolutely. A few errors in judgment, but he was right there. And again, we talked about Pryor. I thought he was going to be, you know, a good NFL quarterback, just like Geno, despite all the criticisms that they were getting. We're not – and the way that certain networks grade these quarterbacks in terms of what they're able to do, I mean, the person who's grading them – you know, does not have nowhere near the talent these players possess physically. Never had, never will, and never do.
Right.
Like you said,
that's where the resentment comes in.
What you're talking about in the quarter, real quick, G, to finish the thought, what you're talking about, in what we're talking about with these positions, the best player plays, period.
That's right.
I read an article about 3 weeks ago, very back then, a man that I trusted. The man that I respected, and he had 30 quarterbacks. He did not put one single African American in the top 10. That's the
In his ratings?
In his ratings.
I will never, because I really liked him last year. He did an honest rating of quarterbacks. And he had two African Americans in the top 10. This year he had zero. You tell me, go and cover in the top 10. You know, RG 10. Now it's about image.
Yep.
It's about control. And in the end, these nine black women are going to make a complete change in the NFL.
You know, and I still think the best of all of them that has fell down the rankings because he has failed with the coaching and the talent around is Cam Newton.
Exactly.
You match him up with Harbaugh. You match him up with Shanahan. Absurd what he would be able to do. You know, he's just in Ron Rivera doesn't have a clue. Jerry Richardson, who was the owner of the team, was the first one that says Cam's the face of the franchise. They don't really promote him right. You know, we don't want you to get any tats. You know, we want you to be this kind of guy because he's one of them old guard NFL owners, too, that wants to hold the fort down.
Let's be real.
But out of all those quarterbacks we mentioned, Kaepernick included, to me, Cam's better than all of them.
Exactly.
You know, and not to say to denigrate them because they're all exceptionally talented players, you know, but he's been, you know, so unsupported by what's around him and still has been able to create crazy statistics. He can't throw the ball to Stephen Smith every friggin' play.
No. And he's won more games each year he's been in the league. People want to casually forget about that, but that's a whole other subject. If I can only imagine somebody like Lovie Smith being able to get a hold of a Cam Newton, you know, they would have no excuse there. But, again, this is an organizational issue. It's an organizational situation. And Richardson has to get past his own bias to make himself understand that, you know, he ain't going to date Susie Cream Cheese, but I need the guy there who's going to help me win. And he needs a coach. Rivera is a coordinator at best. He's not a coach. He's a liability out there.
During the headlights every friggin' game, dude.
Exactly.
You know, are you a zombie? I mean, are you even alive over there? You know, and what he's been able to work with, you know, with the lack of dearth in talent, then they just, you can't wait to, you know, crash in on him on, you know, his production or his personality, his attitude. Like, he can't see the frustration of his ways of the team he's playing with and the lack of personality. Right. And he's doing all he can. Yet, you know, these other brothers have stepped up, but the one they really fear and why they keep pushing him to the back, the guy that can really get it in is Cam Newton, but he's tucked away out there, not in prime time and not on national TV in a major market there in Carolina.
That's right.
It's very, very interesting to note that all the quarterbacks are either on the West Coast or on the East Coast. Every one of them are in the East Coast or the West Coast.
The ninth brother, I just remembered, G, we got to give him his prop, Josh Freeman.
Right.
Josh Freeman.
In Cleveland and Jason Campbell, who might end up starting because of Brandon Weeden failing so bad early on. But I digress. Mm.
Okay. Yeah, Josh Freeman. Josh Freeman, sorry, brother. Yeah, you're doing work in Tampa Bay.
In spite of your coach, yes.
Shiano. Props to Shiano for never turning his back on Eric LeGrand. He gets a high five from me on that.
All right.
That's about it.
And I need to get a Okay, you started the last thing, the promotions of your show and stuff.
Yes, I can, brother. We're going to do a musical version of my show. It's going to be music therapy, courtesy of the old school, tomorrow evening, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. As always, Soul Tree Radio can be found with our Hump Day special, Wednesdays, yes, 9 to 11, and our Saturday edition, 2 to 4, right before the Green Leopard Cove. My first book, Imitation and Life, is available now for purchase on Amazon.com and is downloadable via Kindle. And as a thought, just for to throw into the pot, I want everybody to understand that 50 years ago, the 16th Street Baptist Church was bombed, and four black girls died in the explosion. Condoleezza Rice, who lived not far from there, in a later interview after becoming Secretary of State, said that she never experienced racism in her hometown. And if this is an indication of the consistency of sociopath potentiality that exists in many of the members of Congress, then there's no way to not understand why this country is going in the direction that it has. We've seen the Affordable Care Act now attacked for the 42nd time. Each time they've gone to Congress, they have spent $1.45 million of our money. That's Democrat money. That's Republican money. That's left-wing money, right-wing money. That's black money, white money, red money. That's our money. They've spent $1.45 million of our money on bullshit because they're looking to, for lack of a better word, neuter the efforts of the elected president of the United States to serve we the people. So check that out, Soul Tree Radio and the Raw. We have a Facebook page. You can check out our music, check out our shows. Gary, as always, we love coming to the Cove, my brother.
Thank
you,
brother.
Sir.
I bless the ride with you always. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Yes, sir.
From Eric, his little plug and little promotion there.
Yeah, you know what? Like I was talking to Mike, you know, on a personal level, I decided to deactivate my blog for a minute, you know, difficult time in terms of updating it, you know, so it was just time for me to go into stealth modem online for that particular purpose. I will remanifest in the flesh on blackathlete.com, you know what I'm saying, with some articles and some work, so feel free to check out that new manifestation. I had to shut down the blog because I was tired of sharing my intellectual properties with these maggots who were given proper accommodation to some degree of where they were getting original ideology from. And for those who were hooked and genuinely interested in the metaphysics, it will reappear at a later date under a new domain that is currently in manifestation right now. But if you want to find me in the future with my writings going into the, you know, sports season, that's going to be found at blackathlete.com, blackathlete.net, where I'll be able to share those ideology exclusive to that domain going forward. That's the only plug I can do for that per se. I just want individuals to know that, you know, the blog spot has been deactivated, yet all the intellectual property has been chosen and saved. It can be brought up at an instant, at any moment in time, at a moment that will not be disclosed. But as far as the dialogue today on both shows, you know, appreciate the caller coming in. You know, that input was solid.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
You know, come in anytime. You know, I'm glad you know, found what we communicated, you know, enlightening, and, you know, shared amongst any, you know, share it far and wide, and, you know, continue to come through, not just those who are, you know, personally showing up to what we're communicating and appreciating, but those who stay cloaked, and that's fine too, because the information's free and it's out there for anyone.
Yeah.
I just like to say that, you know, what we do here is we're universal, you know, and global in our perspectives and all people and all things, but, you know, we have self-pride, we have, you know, ethnic pride, we have respect for our ancestors. And with so many individuals, you know, not giving respect and props to the glory of that ancestral line, it's disrespectful. You know, I'll stop or we'll stop talking about, and I'm certain we're in unity here about these honors, is the moment they start taking, you know, George Washington and these other faces and certain images of superiority off money, off images, off certain things like that. The moment I see Benjamin Banneker on a $10,000 bill, you know, the moment I see, mm-hmm. you know, Martin Luther King, not just a holiday and a slate full of afternoon NBA games, you know, in January or whenever they hold that particular festivity, and there's more honor code done physically. The moment when John F. Kennedy was killed, you know, heinously, his 50-year anniversary is coming up, you know, the President of the United States, and he was minted on, you know, money, you know, he's minted on the silver dollar and some other coinage.
Right.
You know, he was honored. He was the last president to do that, you know, who had at least someone, you know, was not perfect in maybe his moral ways, but had an ideology that this nation's for any and everybody and
yep.
universality, and paid the price, you know, in a most heinous way for so many different reasons as a result of having that thought process. All this was 50 years ago.
That's
and
right.
take a look at where you're at now. So we're saying that we're going to be conscientious and relentless and unapologetically with supreme one-dimensional prejudicial goals to recite those individuals who've come forward and did their part, and we do it with due diligence, just like when my children, you know, or everyone else's children, people that come from this country, see certain images on what they say you need the most in this country, money, and we don't see ethnic people on these particular products, things, and we're not trying to politic that, but that means someone's creating a supremacy format of what you should worship and what you should honor, and in God we trust is put on these things and all these subliminal things. We will always honor these people and our ancestors come before us, and all our accomplishments is all its way and tell it like it is no matter what. Ashe.
Ashe.
Reading the knowledge. Eric, reading the knowledge. Thank you, brother, for going to the show.
My brothers, my family, peace.
Yes, indeed.
Hey, thank you, Eric. Thank you, Mike.
Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Here we go. We're coming to end, and we will end with our usual tribute to...
Well, wait, Gary, 707 is still here.
You got another day. Go ahead, then.
I want to make my last look here. Unfortunately, Michael and the other speaker were gone. But the point that was made from Michael is how ESPN is listening.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
the influence that you're having.
Oh, yeah.
It's important to recognize that this show, Michael's show, the other shows are not speaking into a vacuum.
No.
That even if you're not getting the credit, ESPN is listening. The mouse, the rat, is poaching and nibbling on your cheese and spitting it back out there. But you know, and they know, and the kind of conversation that you've had today, hitting all these points, making these points, emphasizing the emergence of these nine quarterbacks with more to come, will be having an effect on ESPN.
Well, I have a question for ESPN, because there's one in my chat room right now. What are you going to do with Teddy Bridgewater, who's at the University of Louisville right now, who's 2-0 and 130 yards a game? What are you going to do with him when he becomes a senior and he graduates? You know he's going to first round. You know he's going to be a quarterback. So it's not going to end.
Right. Well, get that news out there. Get it out there now. And, you know, you put them on notice. And I think the impact that you're having with these kinds of discussions, it's more than a trickle-down effect. I mean, it's in a way, it's a direct pipeline by which, I mean, you know from your experience, there's things you've written that turn up excerpted, plagiarized in the pages of ESPN or on their broadcast shows that are not credited. But you know where they come from, and they know where they come from. So keep up that work.
Thank you, my brother. Hope you have a good weekend, 707.
All right.
Enjoy the weather. I hope to see you soon. All right. We got a couple of notes here. In the MEAC. MEAC, Florida A&M is at Stanford and Tallahassee. Florida A&M, North Carolina A&T is at Elton in about 2 minutes. Hampton is at Tennessee Tech and Virginia. And South Carolina is at Alabama A&M. And that's about 2 minutes to start. And the CIAA, Big Game,
Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Light through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Charlie Stafford, the first black man to win the PGA. Made it possible for Tiger Woods to play today. Althea Gibson, first black woman to win the Wimbledon. Arthur Ashe, Williams sisters, we loved them through all of their trials and tribulations. Bad times we faced it and overcame the situation. Rick Owens won 4 gold medals in the 36th Olympics, breaking records in 3 different events. And all the black women began to dominate. In track and field, they were great in 1948. And a team full of black women won 6 medals and represented in the 52 Olympics. Thanks to William Rudolph and Elise Coachman. Black women, athletes, black coachmen. Flo Jones and Jackie Joyner was terrific in track and field. The best black women that ever did it. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the